Hey, it's Ash. Today's episode of Eat, Talk, Repeat is sponsored by Sam and Ash Injury Law. If you've been injured in a crash, call Sam and Ash, 702-820-1234, or visit samandashlaw.com. Sam and Ash, because you deserve what's right.
Okay. All right.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, we're doing it.
We're doing it. Technology is working because it's Eat, Talk, Repeat, and we are not in the same time zone even, actually.
Not even. No, well, I am 2,000 miles away.
And we like it that way. So yeah, Eat, Talk, Repeat, another episode of the podcast. It's me, Ash Watkins. I have John Curtis broadcasting live from the East Coast, and Sam is not here to do all of the technical wizardry. He is overseas.
Or screw it up.
Yeah, that's you.
The case may be. Okay, yeah. So we're gonna rely on our expertise.
We're gonna try to get this done.
And yes, and we're getting so much good feedback these days. We could not go another week without having a pod.
I know. I feel like we failed our eaters, our followers, because we, we didn't do a podcast last week. I will take the fall for that. I was out of town. My schedule was difficult, and yeah, I will fall on my foodie sword for the podcast. And so this year we are making things work so everyone has something to do and listen to this weekend. We couldn't leave people hanging again. But yeah, cheers at eattalkrepeat.com. That's where you can reach us. And we've been collecting a lot of hate mail, questions, fan mail, all of it, over the last few weeks. So I think it's a good time to recap.
Yeah, let's recap. You want to start with, we've gotten so many great letters from people, emails and whatnot, and direct messages on social media. I mean, where do you want to start? I'm raring to go.
Okay, why don't you start? You've got some on your end because you've got a direct line from all of your eatinglv.com.
Yeah. Yes. And let me shameless plug alert coming up.
Okay.
Shameless plug alert coming up. I dropped a new article on eatinglv.com.
What?
Not eating Las Vegas this time. It's now eating Madrid, as in Spain.
Oh.
Yes. So that went up a week ago and a little less than a week ago. And so all of you who are thinking of traveling to España or Madrid, check it out. Or if you're just going to see some pretty pictures of Spanish food, the way it looks in Spain. So, I call it Spanish Inquisition Part Dos Madrid. Okay. And I just go through like 6 or 7 restaurants that I loved in Madrid. And talk about the food scene there and whatnot. So that's at eatinglv.com. So, all right, that's shameless plug alert right there.
Do your second shameless plug, because I think a lot of people want to know where you've been lately. So give them all your Instagram stuff. So if they don't want to listen to the rest of the podcast, they can go to all your socials. Get the socials, and then you'll see where John goes.
Okay, well, on Twitter, or X as they call it, which I have a fairly sizable following, I'm at Eating Las Vegas, all one word, Eating Las Vegas. On Instagram, where all it seems all the foodies and chefs belong, I'm at John Curtis, my name, JohnCurtas. And between the two of them, I pretty much document all of the restaurants and eating I do all over town and sometimes out of town. So those two on Insta. I also post on Facebook, but I fell out of favor with Facebook a long time ago. And I just think it's a bunch of sad old boomers, you know, who want to send pictures
that
of
you?
Their cat.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Well, I'm fighting mightily to not be a sad old boomer. As one of my sons said, you're fighting mightily to stay relevant, Dad, despite the fact you aren't.
Oh, no, that's not true. We're keeping you relevant.
He was just kidding. We're trying. So that's me on social media. And of course, we try to do a podcast every week here on Eat, Talk, Repeat, so we can just kind of gab about what's happening in the Las Vegas food scene, restaurants we've been to, things we've liked, and things that really set our teeth on edge.
Ooh, I know, and that's a lot. Okay, let's get into some of the listener questions. Again, cheers at etalkrepeat.com. If you have any, send us an email. We all get it.
So you want to start with one?
Why don't we start with the Golden Steer question you have?
Yeah, from Mark. I mean, I got a direct message from a loyal listener, Mark, who follows me on, I think, mainly on Instagram, if I recall. Mm-hmm. And he said he's been trying to get a reservation at Golden Steer now for weeks. And he says it's like it's impossible. They don't even – it's every date he goes to, even like 4, 5, 6 weeks out, booked. Yep. And he goes, you know, what's up with that? And I sympathize, and I both admire Golden Steer.
Do you, John?
No. Well, let's just say I sympathize with people who can't get into restaurants they want to go to. I'm happy for restaurants that are so in demand, especially post-COVID, that have played the social media game so well as Golden Steer has, that they are now overwhelmed with demand for their tables. So I have a lot of admiration and sympathy on those levels. I am left to scratching my head as to why this FOMO mentality that the internet and social media feeds upon creates this demand where everybody's got to go someplace. And if they don't get in, oh my God, I got to go there. Have you heard about the Gold? I mean, I literally have people calling me up saying, John, have you ever heard of this place called the Golden Steer? I hear it's great, you know, and they're writing me from like, you know, Lubbock, Texas. Okay. Places. And it's like, oh my God. So props to the Golden Steer. But Ashley, to respond to Mark, why is it so hard to get a reservation there?
Yeah. So it's no secret that we are great friends with the owners, the proprietors of the Golden Steer, Amanda Signorelli, the daughter of Michael Signorelli, and her husband, Nick. They operate it and maintain it and do all of this. And she was telling me, yes, they optimize social media during COVID. They also have a direct to consumer meat purchasing program where you can go online and basically order the same steaks that they're selling and seasonings and butters and all of that stuff. So they've added different revenue streams. But then as far as the reservations go, they realized, look, the social media game is creating this overwhelming, actually, demand. So all these people are reaching out, making these reservations far in advance to secure them. But then like a day before or two nights before, they're canceling. And so what these restaurants have had to do is they'll release a limited amount of these reservations far in advance, but then they start like staggering them and they'll release more and more and more as it gets closer. And so what I always advise people is call. This is still a very old school restaurant. They keep, you know, most restaurants keep records of you as a customer. Your phone number, that creates a consumer profile. They know when you've been, what you've ordered, what you like what you do, if you're great, if you're not. So like, hey, you get like 5 stars when you leave most restaurants anymore, or 4 stars if you're a shitty guest. And so what I would recommend to Mark.
What does Sam get? What does Sam get? You know, sorry to interrupt.
No. What does Sam get? I bet Sam probably gets 5 stars. I think he's like.
He's a 5-star guy most of the time. Yes,
I think so.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
So what I recommend for Mark and anyone else who's trying to get a reservation is, you know, if you live locally, show up early. Like there's a line out the door to when this thing opens every day to get the bar seating at the bar, the high tops in the bar area, that's open. So show up a little early. Alternatively, show up and just talk to the hostess. And they will likely be able to make it work. If you are dressed well, you're courteous, you're nice, and you're like explaining your situation. You know, there's a lot that can be done with some good old fashioned, you know, smiling, honey, you know, all of that stuff. That's my recommendation to Mark.
Good recommendation, but let's have a caveat on top of that.
Okay.
all these things work, but the, you know, they, when they don't work Friday and Saturday night at 7 o'clock.
Correct. Okay. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. You're going to have to get off this bandwagon mentality of, well, you know, I'm going to take my mother and my brother-in-law and my sister. We want a reservation for 6, 7:30 Saturday night. Can you work us in? No. You know, that's when everybody wants to go out. Okay.
Right.
You're going to have to readjust. There's sometimes you just have to write off the idea. If you really want to go to a restaurant and it's that important to you, you're going to have to go there on a Tuesday night or a Monday night or a Wednesday night.
Correct.
And you're more likely. And I think in some ways you'll have a better experience too, because it's not jammed to the rafters and they're happier to see you, a little more relaxed. Yeah, I know you can't cut loose, you know, with the booze and the whooping it up like you can on a weekend night.
Oh yeah, you can. You just got to be a weekday warrior. It's a mentality job.
Well, not if you have 3-day hangovers like I get. These days. Okay, but anyway, so that's great advice on that. So let's go to another letter.
Okay, let's
from
go.
From a listener here. I'll give you one.
Okay, go.
You first.
No, you.
Okay, somebody just wrote us last week and said. What do you have any advice on the podcast for where to take people on Mother's Day? And I said, yes. And then don't go.
Yeah.
Homie, don't do that.
I know.
Homie, don't make recommendation on Mother's Day. Mother's Day is the worst day of the year to eat out. And that second, of course, is Valentine's Day. So if you don't take your mom out the day before, or maybe a week before Mother's Day, or a week after. I'm fresh out of no offense to the listener, and I appreciate the letter, but no, I'm not giving you Mother's Day recommendations because I can never recommend any restaurant on Mother's Day.
Oh, this
I just can't
is so great because I responded. I like to reply to these emails even before we sometimes get to it on the pod. So I replied to this email and I said, John's going to tell you to avoid going out at all costs. And it is. And it is the little sister scam to Valentine's Day at restaurants. Once you get past that reply, I'd consider your mom and her specific interests. If I had to pick a place based on typical feminine brunch vibe, then I'd go to La Fontaine in the Fountain Blue. It was built for Mother's Day brunch. It's got those pastel pinks, golds. It's beautiful, high-end French food. So that was my response, and I called it.
Okay, you called it, and great advice, and I'm glad. That's why you get the big money, Ash Watkins, because you have the patience to walk.
I get the most of nothing.
I'm going to give you a raise.
It's thank
five
you.
5 times 0, okay?
All right. As long as the numbers are going up.
Let's see.
We've got something. Someone reached out about going to Wynn and the new Alon Shaya restaurant come pop-up.
Yeah, well, okay. Now, again, of course, I am the irascible epicure here, so I'm going to be more curmudgeonly than usual.
Do it.
Again, homie, don't do pop-ups, okay? I don't know. You know, I just don't. I mean, sorry. I'm not getting excited about anybody's pop-up. Or what's the other, the chef takeover, you know, that kind of shit that's big, which is just, you know, kitchen takeover. I'm going to this restaurant and I'm going to do my thing. Screw that noise. Okay. You know, you're a chef, be in a restaurant. Enough with this pop-ups. If you're good enough, you'll run a restaurant. And if you're not good enough, work at someone else's restaurant. Don't ask me to get excited about you doing second level food in a transient manner. Okay. So I don't like to, whatever Shai is doing, God bless. When he opens a real restaurant, I'll go there.
Okay. Well, fair enough. We kind of predicted that when it went from a restaurant to a pop-up that it was going to downgrade. And this listener said their experience was,
exactly.
a pale comparison to the original restaurant in New Orleans. So
exactly. So what did you, why exactly, which just proves my point. So that's, yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
We love those kind of letters too. I mean, it's both the comments, because I think some of our listeners are very perceptive people, and a lot of them have very experienced palates. So when they tell us, yeah, I went there, you know, and it wasn't worth it, I believe you, okay, which just reinforces my own opinions. So who doesn't like to have being okay?
Okay.
Anyway, okay.
I got another one from Penny. My husband and I moved here from Austin last June, and the show has been a great resource as we explore the food and drink scene. Penny, the food and drink scene in Las Vegas is exactly how I figured out Las Vegas. So I'm with you. I was there once, and I'm glad you listen. Her question for us is, why do so few restaurants have happy hour? So, John, do you have any recommendations that you know that do happy hour? $2? Come on.
Shall I say, homie, don't do that for the third time in one podcast? Okay, here's the reason they don't have happy hour. Number one,
they don't need
the ones
to.
That don't have, they don't need to.
Right.
You know, Golden Steer does not need a happy hour. Correct. Right now. Esther's Kitchen doesn't need a happy hour. Al Solito Posto doesn't need a happy hour.
I think
a lot of restaurants.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. No, you go.
No. Well, I think a lot of them work. They have various different angles they're working that are sort of like that. I remember one of my favorite Italians, Aromi Italian, out in the out in Summerlin. They do like half price their whole wine list on Wednesday, things like that. But the old idea of get two for one drinks early on, I think that's kind of a relic of the 20th century that's slowly fading. I also think people don't like it because it it tends to attract the wrong crowd. There are a lot of people come there just for the bargains, but they don't stay and actually make the restaurant any money. So that's why I think it doesn't happen. And so I can't really suggest any, but I do look at restaurants for different promotional deals they run sometimes, especially on wine, not so much two for one cocktails. I just don't see a lot of low price cocktails anywhere except in kind of lower end restaurants, which I tend to avoid.
Funny enough, I think Ocean Prime on the Strip actually does a happy hour. I think 1228 Main does a happy hour of sorts. You know, I would go to their website and I think they have various deals depending on the day, like half off certain bottles of wine or cocktails. And then John, there's the classic Herbs and Rye. They do like steak happy hour.
Yeah, well, and they've done that for years. I mean, and there's a line out that door.
Yeah.
And there's another reason that I think is worth noting. People do dine earlier now, too.
Yes.
Happy hour was always a way to fill up your restaurant between, like, let's say, you know, 5 and 7 when everybody was eating dinner, mm-hmm. 7:30, 8. Now people are just showing up. I mean, that's been a fallout from COVID. People now show up for dinner. I mean, young people, not just the silver hairs, you know, the young people are showing up for dinner at 6. And when you've got a full restaurant or a semi-full restaurant at 5:36, you don't need to entice people in the door. But yeah, Herbs and Rye is the granddaddy of that stuff. And God bless them. It's hard to get a table there at 5 o'clock every day.
It is. So Adam, love the show. Frequent visitor who enjoys local recommendations, anything to get off the Strip. He tried to give us a recommendation. A bartender at the Aria pointed Adam and his party to a dive bar with great Detroit pizza. John, do you want to guess what it is?
Red Dwarf.
Yes, there you go.
See?
Adam, yeah.
All right, very good.
Adam, you should have been listening. You should have been listening like a year ago. This show went through a Detroit pizza phase, and I think we've all just finished digesting that pizza. I mean, as a visitor, it's
so
great.
True.
It's great because you're here for a weekend. Enjoy it. I love the Red Dwarf. I love the tiki vibe. You feel like you're underwater. It's an incredible
beers too.
Yes.
And, you know, Russell Gardner's the owner, and he's a Cicerone, mm-hmm. a beer meister. This guy knows his beer. So between the cocktails, the beers, and the Detroit pizza, Red Dwarf is a real find. Now, it does have kind of a divey bar vibe, though. I mean, it's not
it doesn't have a vibe, John. It is a dive bar.
Okay. I stand corrected. Okay, yes, it is a dive bar. It's a, don't walk in there in your Sunday best or you'll feel as out of place as a I don't know, as a rabbi in an Arkansas pig picking.
But if you're okay with that, like I am, I'm very okay feeling out of place. I do that. Like I've been in a suit from work and I go at lunch because I was craving a Detroit pizza. Although my waistline can't do that anymore. But I loved Red Dwarf. Another great dive bar recommendation is Hard Hat Lounge. They used to do Detroit pizza, but now they've flipped over to one of my favorite little finds out of the Vegas Test Kitchen, which is Stay Tuned Smash Burgers. So,
yes, the Stay Tuned Smashburger are just incredible there. The only places in town dive bars can get me in the door are the Hard Hat and the Red Dwarf.
Yep. Yeah, and don't sleep on the tots when you're at the Hard Hat Lounge. The Stay Tuned Burger tots are incredible. Let's see.
I don't get tots. We'll argue tots another time. You know,
we'll talk about it later.
Tit for tot.
Generally,
yeah, yeah.
I'm with you. There's not really much to argue. Generally, I'm not a tater tot person, but for whatever reason, when I went there, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'll support. Give me some tots. Don't care. But theirs were impressive. Very crispy on the outside, flavorful, got a little seasoning. Yeah.
And they serve them with the cheese sauces, I believe, or some special sauce.
Yeah, like their burger sauce.
All right, anyway. Next one.
Let's do one more and then take a quick break, come back, do some more, and then also go into where you've been this week. Because you've been, before leaving for D.C., you were all over the valley. So
I was.
Let's do Kelly T. She said, thank you for bringing this up as a pet peeve. I think she's referencing the blowtorch fad. She goes, I can always taste the fuel in the food. I've started to think I was the only one, or maybe it was just the cheap places I had been. Now she knows she's not the only one. So there you go.
Yeah, we were not alone, Kelly. I feel your pain. I mean, I got a lot of positive feedback when I started talking about that on this podcast and on social media, because and then somebody said, it's the difference between propane and butane. I don't care what it is. just don't put artificial flames on you. You know, I'm not going to argue the fine points of natural gas with some goddamn chef. Okay, just stop doing it with the flame of. Look at me. I mean, it's just ridiculous, and it's such a fad. It doesn't really add anything. I mean, sushi chefs do it, Italian chefs do it. It's ridiculous. I put on one of my social media things the best way to flame food, and it was from Raku, a place I went to again this past week. And of course, they do it the way the French have done it forever. The way. You know, the way the Italians have done it, great chefs have been doing this for centuries. They heat brandy and then pour the brandy, which both perfumes the food, the alcohol burns off, and leaves a residue of that rich, deep, deep flavor that you get from a cognac or a brandy or any sort of high alcohol liquid that is meant to be consumed, you know, rather than used as, you know, in a fake fire pit, which is what the... So, yeah, I'm so with you, Kelly, on that one.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for triggering him again. I appreciate it, as always.
God dang.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, do a few more of these, and then you've been to all these places. I want to hear about them.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, it's Ash, your favorite host of the show. I just know it. Look, besides exploring the Las Vegas food scene, my life's passion is being an injury attorney. So if you or a loved one needs dedicated and passionate legal representation, call Sam and Ash Injury Law. I promise our team will fight for your recovery even more than Sam does to get a word in during this podcast. Again, if you or a loved one needs an injury attorney or simply has legal questions, call 702-820-1234 or visit samandashlaw.com. That's 702-820-1234 or samandashlaw.com. Sam and Ash, because you deserve what's right. Now back to the food, because let's face it, that's what we're all really here for.
She pressed the right button. Pop music. By the way, shout out to my sister Betsy, who listens, my big sis, who listens to the podcast all the way back in Athens, Georgia. I mean, she loves that little pop music thing.
Yeah?
You want to know? Hear the whole song. Oh, yeah, yeah. So we've got fans all over, okay?
You know,
even in Georgia.
Well, Betsy, thanks for listening. Appreciate it. That's been the most shocking thing, since we started the fan mail line of cheers at etalkrepeat.com, is where everyone is listening from. I mean,
yeah,
we've been doing this podcast for over a year, and finally, when we did the email address and was starting to get all this fan mail, hate mail, whatever, and actually we don't get any hate mail. We just get people that have had different experiences, which frankly I love, but was seeing where they were all listening from all over the country, like Ohio, Northern California, Arizona, Florida, like Texas. I mean, really incredible. Yeah. And so that's been fun. And then I guess a year into this, I finally decided to look at the analytics of confirm it on the back end, which I think we probably as podcasters should have been doing at the beginning. But again, we're doing this for free, and really we're doing this for ourselves. So, but yeah, so it's fun. I'm loving it.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I mean, naively, I guess when we started this, I mean, up until just a few months ago, I always thought that most of our listeners and of course, you know, letters and emails and everything would come from Vegas and California, maybe. You know, that to me, I would figure, oh, that's got to be 80-90% of our audience. But I think our audience, like you say, is coming from, you know, Oklahoma and Georgia and Missouri and places like that, which is great. So happy that we're helping out. Because, yeah, Vegas is intimidating. I mean, we live here. We go out all the time. And that's why you listen to us. At least you don't have to agree with us, but we'll tell you where we've been and why we like it or don't like it. And at least it gives some guidance, which is and it's unvarnished. You know, unlike a lot of social media influencers, we're not doing this because someone's paying us to recommend these places. I mean, it's I've never taken a dime of promotional consideration in 30 years of writing about the Las Vegas restaurant scene. I mean, I published a book and I got paid for magazine articles. But that was a straight economic exchange with the readers, not some restaurant buying my opinion so they can use me to promote themselves.
Yeah.
So I hope that's what people respond to, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Absolutely, and that's but we also acknowledge you have a different experience at some of these restaurants than I do, or Sam does, and some of our listeners. So that's what makes this fun. We're here to tell you what we love, what we've enjoyed, and it's not bought and paid for. And that sets us apart from all the TikTokers and Instagrammers and influencers. We're just, you know, we're just eaters. That's it. It's like the show. We just eat, we talk, and then we repeat. We do it all over again. So let's get back to some listener questions or emails. We got Ben C., who said he has just a quick croissant recommendation.
Croissant.
And I love that his email even phonetically spelled it out how we always joke. So thank you, Ben.
Croissant.
For being a true fan. He recommended Desert Bread Pop-Up, which is on Saturdays. And maybe for the fifth time, John, do you want to say it? Homie don't.
Croissant.
No, I was going to say homie, homie don't.
Homie don't do no pop-ups.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Homie really don't do no pop-ups in Henderson, Nevada, okay?
I know.
And now, that said, I have heard nothing but fabulous things about the Desert Bread's baked goods. I've heard it from chefs, other bakers, consumers, people who I think have very refined palates about these things say it's great. But it's one of these things you have to put your orders in days in advance. You have to drive to Henderson to get it. I mean, I'm sure, guys, it's great. I'm not disparaging the product. I'm just too old and too lazy and too full of myself to go that far out to eat a piece of bread, no matter how great it is.
Well, I think you also mentioned it on last week's podcast. You're too spur of the moment. So this requires planning.
And also requires, I mean, I don't know, this has got to be a common problem, especially with couples, childless couples, single people. Whenever the food gal and I don't have any bread, we're craving bread and we buy it. And then it always ends up to be too much bread. So we go from feast or famine all the time. We have no bread in the house and we wish we had a loaf. And then we buy a loaf or two loaves. And then we have all this bread and we don't know what to do with it. Okay. Because we simply love it more than we can eat it. I mean, like a big boule or a giant baguette. It will go bad before the food gal and I actually finish it. So we're always in this nether world of having bread or having stale bread, and it's hard to hit the sweet spot on just how much to buy and eating it just at its optimal state of freshness.
That sounds
so. I think like that's an old person complaint, I guess.
Yeah, it really is. Also, Ben had a great question, and I'm curious to hear this because I think recently you went to some like barbecue Mexicana, and I was like, where the F did you find this? So Ben wonders, where does John's restaurant cravings come from? Is it straight from his consumption? Or no, okay, I'm screwing this up. I wonder where John's restaurant cravings come from. Is it straight from his curmudgeon cranium? Does he get inspired from a social media and other local foodie insiders? Does he discuss dinner with the food gal, or does he secretly get all of his food recs from Keith Lee? Just kidding.
Good
so
one,
where
Ben.
Do you
Very
where
good.
Do you find these places?
Okay, well, I always appreciate it when people like Ben sort of have discovered me in their now, you know, in the year 2024, the 21st century, when I've been writing about food for 30 years. So part of it, I would say, I rely very little on other social media people. I mean, part of it's just having covered this territory for so long. I mean, I guess I'm like a sports writer who's been covering the NFL that knows the assistant trainers in all the locker rooms, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? Or
yeah.
the coaches and the third string linebacker who's just been traded to the Atlanta Falcons. I can tell you who that is. You know, I've just been doing it so long that I feel like I'm personally plugged into a lot of things. And I mean, I'm not going to say I don't rely on other people because I've scaled it back. When I was writing that 10 years of writing Eating Las Vegas, the book, I was scouring the neighborhoods and the hotels like every, you know, 7 days a week. I mean, 8 months, it was 4 months to write, 8 months of research and 4 months to write it. I mean, for 10 years. And I got to know an awful lot of people there. Now for the newer things that pop up, the new restaurants. Yeah, I don't have that same avariciousness, you know, insatiability that I had, you know, like 10 years ago. So yeah, sometimes it'll take an Ash Watkins, or it might be a social media friend. Have you tried the pizza at blah, blah, blah? Rebellion Pizza in Henderson, a great idea. But Anthem Henderson, great example of this. I mean, I would never have hauled my ass up to Anthem in Henderson to try the New York style pizza there. But I had a Facebook buddy say, I think you know, he'd been following me. He says, I think you'll really like this. And he was right. It was just great New York street pizza, like the best version maybe in Las Vegas at Rebellion Pizza. So I do rely on other people. Not influencers, no. I mean, I think my spidey sense is such. I can puncture an influencer's fake expertise in about a millisecond, and I can tell when they know what they're talking about and when they don't. And this whole idea is, oh man, this is the one jam you have to have. The one taco jam that only the inside of Vegas people know. You can tell that's bullshit.
Hey,
and there's a lot of it out there.
You posted a photo up at the Uncommons at Alan Tico. Did you actually go?
Alan Tico. No, I didn't go to Alan Tico.
You just drove
I was going
to
go, but it was empty.
What? It was empty, so you didn't go?
Hey, and the fourth thing, homie, don't go to no empty restaurants.
Oh, my gosh. You're literally Goldilocks. You are the yeah. Goldilocks well, gastronome. Yeah. It's like too busy, not going. Not busy enough, okay. Not going.
Well, one more thing to say about Ben, and we really appreciate Ben. Yeah, so I rely on myself more than anybody else. I do have stringers all over town, a lot of social media contacts, a lot of contacts in the chef and restaurant world, managers, chefs, et cetera. People like Keith Lee, God bless him. I think he's an amiable idiot. I don't think he knows anything about food.
Correct.
But, you know, if he has a following, you know, oh my God, you won't believe how good the sub sandwich is. Oh my God, I give it an 8.9 out of 10. I mean, okay, if that's what you're looking for, I'm glad the Keith Lees are out there to fulfill your need. But I'm coming at food from a much more, let's say, elitist standpoint, looking for the best of the best. I'm not looking to appeal to the common man. There's enough people to tell you where the best cheap Subway sandwich is.
John, I don't think anyone looks at you and thinks the common man. Well,
not 50 years ago, not even then. Okay, so thanks, Ben. That's a great comment.
Okay.
All right,
we've got one last one. Andrew, ETR, love the show. Thank you, Andrew. At Esther's Kitchen, bar seating should be open, first come, first serve. I love you, Esther's Kitchen, but this is a grievance I share, and this is why we're going to air it. And again, we understand you're new, you're figuring it out, but here we go. Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m., 14 bar seats are open. We walk in for a two-top bar. We were quoted 40-minute wait. Large party to come in. They reserved all the seats. And he was like, not waiting 40 minutes to eat anywhere. So we walk across the street, have lunch at Good Pie instead. 55 minutes later, we're walking back to the car, and that bar is still empty. Moral of Andrew's story, shouldn't have him, I'm going to maybe edit this, shouldn't have kids run your restaurant front door.
He's saying you shouldn't have kids young people running your front, the front of the house.
There. Yep. Bartenders suffer. Bottom line suffers. And he said, I write this because you guys talk so highly of them and maybe we'll pass the message along. We are passing the message along right here. Also, this is something I experienced once. I showed up for brunch one weekend and it was just two of us, didn't have a reservation. And Mr. Hollywood and I asked, like, oh, yeah, just two, no reservation. Bar, where they were like bar, booth, table. We're like, whatever. And there is bar seating that's open, tables that are open, booths that are open. But there were these like three very young hosts behind that computer screen looking like they were doing nuclear physics back there.
They were splitting the atom.
Right. I was like, I mean, I've seen Oppenheimer. I've seen the movie. And you guys look like you're doing something more intense than that. And so, And then all of a sudden more people came in, similar story. And ended up being about 12 people lined up at the host booth. The restaurant had tables, bar seating, everything was open. These very young hosts who are figuring it out. And I get it. You've got to train. You've got to learn. But you know what? You've got to also get people in those seats. You have to get them there so that, you know, you're paying, you're able to pay your chefs, you're able to pay your waiters, waitresses, busboys, bartenders, etc. And so finally someone else who looked like they knew what they were doing started like air traffic controlling legitimately and was like, okay, you two are going over there, throw some menus at these young hosts and they seat us. But yeah, I mean, look, this is something Esther's Kitchen's going to have to figure out. I think it's tough. I think they want bar seating to be more of a place where you eat and people are comfortable with it. So they're trying to allow reservations. But I think that's also a turnoff when people kind of try and squeeze in at lunch or right at 5 and want to get a quick bite and drink and they can't because someone has reserved them and then either is very late or no shows. So
right. Oh yeah, and it's. Oh, I've talked to Esther's management about this because they have this dynamic tension between. But when they were opening, how much do we want to let our bar be like drop-ins? You know, where like you, me, and three of our friends come in, we just want to have a drink.
Yep.
Versus like, you know, we're going to have a dozen people sitting there eating, and they know that people like to eat at the bar. It's a great idea to have people eat at the bar, but. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to blame. I mean, you know me, I'm an old guy. I don't enjoy anything more than blaming Gen Zs and Gen Xers for all the ills of the world.
Are you coming to their defense?
But I'm going to come to the defense of the young ladies running. They are usually under strict orders to do things like do this. Okay, well, if we have that, you can't do that. And they're not given a lot of discretion. I think if there's a criticism to this kind of management, it comes to when you don't have, I mean, the person who owns Esther's Kitchen is a chef. He's in the kitchen. He's managing the kitchen. He is not running the front of the house. When you have owners that are at the front of the house, or let's say an owner or a manager who's a part owner of the place, who has real authority, they're able to do things on the fly and look at the young host and say, no, we're going to bring Mr. Miller and his two guests over here right now. And hey, Mr. Miller, can you be in and out of there in about 30 minutes, okay, because we got people coming. No problem, sir. Blah, blah, blah. That's a kind of discretionary service and hospitality that you don't give the authority to young people for good reasons. They neither could handle it nor do they want it. But it hurts the customer. And when you leave people with a bad taste in your mouth, I think that's because you got to look at upper management could solve these problems, but sometimes they're busy with other things. And I'm with the reader here. I mean, nothing frosts me more than being told, we're fully committed. I remember that. That was the big term, like five. We're fully committed. And yeah. You look around and go, I'm looking at 9 empty tables. You go down the street, you finish something out, you walk back in, an hour later, mm-hmm. You still see 8 empty tables, okay? It's like, what the fuck, okay? So, yeah, I don't know. So, Esther's is trying to work this out, but they're so popular right now.
Well,
I don't know.
Andrew and I had a little bit different experiences, but our frustration started at the host counter. I love Esther's Kitchen, but do not become a Hillstone Group restaurant and make bar seating reservation seating. Just don't do it. I want people to be able to.
I want people to be able to come in
and sit down, and that's it, they can't lose their essence of being a local neighborhood kitchen. And
right.
If you start doing that, you have now essentially made yourself the Hillstone restaurant in the Arts District, and I don't like it. So that's my preference, is let the bar seating be bar seating, but don't let people hover either. I get that. That's frustrating.
Well, you don't want 6 drunk guys on a corner of the bar whooping it up for 2 hours. You know what I mean? You're trying to really thread a needle here, you know, and it's difficult. So, we're kind of running out of time. So let me get to a few recommendations real fast here, because I'm back here in DC on business, I've got to get back to my business. So, I'll tell you where I've been this past week. And, as usual, all these places come highly recommended unless otherwise noted.
Perfect.
Dropped in on Latai. Latai on West Charleston, right near downtown. Latai 2, actually. Latai 2. And I tweeted out that I thought it's the best restaurant in the shittiest shopping center in Las Vegas. Prove me wrong. I mean, it is really, really good Thai street food in this nothing burger of a shopping center where there's a Jimmy John's and the Omelet House and a bunch of crappy little stores. I mean, 100%. I'm sure there's worse. Yeah. But Latai is great. Yeah, EDO. Well, EDO, I think, though, has a real big foodie vibe in that shopping center. And there's a lot of good restaurants.
That's true.
China Mama's there. So Latai, it gets my vote for the best and the worst. Went back to, back-to-back went to Ferraro's and Basilico to get a new and an old school take on Las Vegas Italian.
Okay.
Basilico, of course, Francesco Di Caudo, fantastic, new, kind of newer, more modern pastas, things like that. Went to Ferraro's. And Mimo Ferraro knocked us out with the best vitello tonnato I've had in town this year.
Wow.
The best crudo I've had in town this year. And the best gorgonzola gnocchi I've had in town this year.
Okay.
I've been going to Ferraro's since 1986. And this may be one of the best meals I've ever had there. And of course, they have fabulous wine lists. They're open for lunch. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. High thumbs up for both Basilico and Ferraro's.
Doesn't Francesco over at Basilico have a little bit of a pedigree with Ferraro's? Wasn't he there at one point?
Yeah, he was chef of the year. He was Desert Companion's chef of the year when he was at Ferraro's. But like a lot of chefs, you know, they tend to be a peripatetic lot, and he moved on.
Okay.
So now he's – but I also think Ferraro's is a little – it's Mimo Ferraro's not totally old school. I mean, he's not a red sauce chef. He's definitely Northern Italian, more sophisticated Italian food. But I think Francesco needs to kind of do his own thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's doing it at Basilico. So good for him. Went back to Nakamura Ya. Again, it's where Mr. Hollywood and I had our first date at Nakamura Ya, Ash. Yeah, and we're still fantastic.
My first date with you was at Ferraro. So this is funny.
Yeah, exactly. This is nostalgia time here.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it was great. Nakamura Ya is great. It's just, it's that wafu Japanese Italian pasta. It is so fabulous. I mean, and not inexpensive, but such a bargain for, it's just like, you know, the uni pasta with uni pasta carbonara. I mean, they do the manteco pasta. They do a fabulous little like skirt steak there, which is one of the best little cheap steaks I've had in Las Vegas. So Nakamura Ya on Spring Mountain Road. And then I went to, the Barbecue Mexicana, because the food gal had heard about it, and it's right across the freeway from the Uncommons, And I said, you know, the uncommons are all that nonsense and with the QR code ordering, which maybe they don't do, but it's a central kitchen and and you have to pay for parking. Well, we decided let's don't do that. Let's just cross the freeway, pull up to Barbecue Mexican, you park right by the front door, you walk in and you get just incredible tacos. I mean, we just got this barbecue brisket, big chunky chunks of smoked brisket, like burn-in briskets, and pulled pork tacos. Then they made us a fresh-made chocolate chip cookie, which knocked my socks off. Then they served us these fresh peach empanadas. Okay, this isn't like a fast food restaurant. It's run by the two hot tamales, Mary Sue Milliken and Susan Feniger. They have more than one around town. So it's an offshoot of, you know, the Border Grill. But Barbecue Mexicana is the real deal, okay? If you want great fast food tacos, I'm not sure they get any tastier than that place.
Wow.
So that's pretty much my highlight of the week.
The Food Gal is your secret weapon with these recommendations here. So
yeah, we should tell her that the letter writer, she actually scopes things out, and I trust her palate. When my wife says, you know, like that, John, I trust her. She knows what I'm not going to like.
Oh, I want to get into this because otherwise these have been too great of recommendations, too much high praise going. Before I let you go, I want to hear about your venture to Oscars, which used to have one of the.
Jonathan Jostle is going to be so mad at me now. Okay. I'm sorry. I called it the best burger in downtown. I went there the other night. It was, we were all kind of needed to protein up after a 4-hour lunch, and we ordered four burgers, as a Sam Marjofsky move there. You know, two would have done. We ordered four, cut them in half, and I only tasted three of the four, but they were dry, underseasoned, overcooked, very just not the same burger I had like a year ago. It was just me. And I found out later the chef was out of town. The owner, the president of the hotel wrote me. I said, I got to call it like I see it. Okay. And then somebody on, I think one of my regs on social media said, I went there. I wasn't impressed either. He says, now I'm glad you're finally fessing up, Curtis.
But, oh my gosh.
But yeah, you know, all it takes is the B team. If you got the B team on and they put, it's kind of a smash burger. You leave it too long on the grill. You don't season it right, and you let it just cook that extra 2 or 3 minutes, and you just get a dry patty. I mean, it made a McDonald's quarter pounder seem like juicy. Okay, it was just seriously cooked with a lot of negligence. Okay, that's the only way I can say
it.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad.
Let's hope they get better.
I'm sure. Okay,
now finally, I have a pet peeve of the week, real quick, because I got to wrap this up pretty fast here. Pet peeve of the week: hot house stale tomatoes. Is there anything worse?
No.
Discuss.
That's the worst. Especially if you're a sandwich shop and your veggies are a vital ingredient. And you need to, and you're like displaying them whole, like 100%. 100%.
And you say, look at our gourmet sandwiches. And then you put what's basically a pinkish white slab of a hot house half raw tomato on there that brings nothing to the party. It doesn't even bring color to the party.
No.
And you're looking at who is owning and managing this place that they think that's okay. Okay. I mean, and I see them in sandwich shops, and I get if I'm at Jimmy John's or Subway, fine. But guess what? I've had them in these gourmet sandwich shops that are just absolute shit. And I mean, it's a pet peeve, and I know I'm not the only one, but somehow in America, the fast food sandwich makers thought people want tomatoes in February and January, so we've got to put them on there. No, they don't. Just leave them off, for Christ's sakes. Okay, so that's that, and I will, because homie don't do no hot house tomatoes, and that's the theme of this week's Eat Talk Repeat.
Homie don't do. Insert. Fill in the blank.
Do that.
Yeah, there we go. Well, I don't really have pet peeve this week. I appreciate you, John, from calling in, doing this from 2,000 plus miles away. Everyone go check out his social media handles for photos and go to eatinglv.com for the latest blog. And yeah, tune in next week. We try to do this every Friday. And also do us a favor, like, subscribe, 5 stars, all of that. Leave us a review. If you love this show, we appreciate you telling us through the emails, but also help us get to other listeners. So like, subscribe, leave a review. And that is it. That's it.
Bon appetit to all. Good night, Canada.
Hey, it's Ash, your favorite amateur and unpaid food critic. Have we influenced you to try any of our recommendations? If so, we want to hear about it. Be sure to follow us on social media and tag us at Eat Talk Repeat. You can also email us at cheers@eattalkrepeat.com. Send us your hate mail, suggestions, questions, recommendations, and pet peeves. We want to hear about it. Don't forget, like, subscribe, and leave the show a review. Bon appetit.